this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, please join us as we interview Bubba Thutt, creator of the Neverwinter Nights 1 module, Agronaut Beneath the Cobbles.
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community, by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Jaston here from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
And this is Bubba Thud, author of Agronaut Beneath the Cobbles.
And you're listening to the 143rd episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, this is a heck of a podcast episode we got here, a new segment. We got a lot of stuff from Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2. But we got some housekeeping stuff and some announcements here at the Neverwinter Nights podcast. First is the unveiling our first appearance, public appearance. We're going to be at One Origins Game Fair in downtown Columbus, Ohio, at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. We're going to be set up in an unknown location at this point because we're still waiting to hear back from the Origins Game Runners, the GAMA Foundation organization. They're going to be try to get a hold of them to get us a specific location set up so that we could say ahead of time. So if you anybody out there in the listening audience would like to come out and meet us and listen to our podcast and reviews that we're going to do right there on the spot that you'd be able to. It's going to be kind of a game time decision. So as far as where we're at, we're going to be leaving on 6/24 and scoping the place out on Friday evening to figure out exactly what some possible locations, free areas that we could set up. Also, we will be there on 6/25, which is Saturday, and we'll be set up. And we're in talks right now with the public relations director at Cryptic to get an interview with the executive producer of the new Neverwinter title. He's going to be there as a special guest appearance at the Origins Game Fair, and hopefully we can get some time etched out where we'll be able to give him a short interview and discuss some of the new things about the new Neverwinter. Speaking of the new Neverwinter by Cryptic, they have released their website in full now with images, videos, a really slick-looking trailer that they presented at the E3 Gaming Convention. And they have a fact section, even going into some of the new tool set that they have created for it so that players can make their content very similar to what has been done in Neverwinter Nights 1 and Neverwinter Nights 2. It's called The Foundry. And it does look very cool for players to be able. It looks like it appeals to a much wider audience than some of the previous instances of the tool sets have because they've been more technical oriented. This one here seems to be more, just easy to use. Really focused on user interactivity and user ability. There's a few screenshots out there, so it looks really cool and really interesting. And I'm glad to see that they're taking that direction with the game to be able to create your own content as well. So as far as the details and how it's going to operate, that's to be determined as we speak. Something else I would like to go over is we had added two new sections to the Neverwinter Nights podcast website. The first is going to be something we had discussed over in the past couple episodes of an idea where we were going to create a place to put must-have custom content, things that if you're a developer of a persistent world or a module, this is a place to go. Because these are things that, from our experience, we're extremely experienced with Neverwinter Nights 2 from the Realms of Trinity, and we also have people on staff here at the Neverwinter Nights podcast that are very in tune and have spent a lot of time in the custom content arena for Neverwinter Nights 1. And there's a lot of tools that, even I didn't even know about even until recently, that are out there on the vault to kind of lose focus because of the enormous amount of content that is on the IGN vault. It'll just be a quick place to go if you're just getting started, or hey, even if you've been out there for a while and you want to see if there's a piece of custom content that might make your module come to life more than you had anticipated, this would be the place to go. And there's going to be a lot of stuff there, including models, module resources like sky domes and scripts. And, you know, we'll try to organize it really well and make it really easy to navigate. But right now we did add them to our main navigation with coming soon page. And then the second one that we've created is going to be featuring our new series of contests. We're yet to kick it off yet, but the first contest I can say is going to revolve around Neverwinter Nights 2 creature models. It is a subject that has just come up recently because there is an individual who has been creating a lot of Neverwinter Nights 2 creature modules that he's done a fantastic job. I'm going to try to get him on the show coming up here in a couple episodes later and talk to him about it and get content off. So it's something to definitely look out for, and winners will receive something. We haven't figured out yet what exactly we're going to do, whether it's going to be some kind of a trophy mail out to the winner or whatever, but it's definitely in the details of how things are judged or whatever, but looking at the stuff that's out there and the needs in the community, we're starting with the Neverwinter Nights 2 creature models because they are somewhat lacking. At least new ones have been somewhat lacking over the course of the last year or two. So, but we will be having other categories. One of them will be Persistent Worlds. It's a topic that has been not totally ignored by other rating and other contest driven sites. So that's something that I think that would really benefit and be inspiring to Persistent World developers to be able to go in and, you know, hey, look, you know, I got nominated, man. This our Persistent World, you know, they spent all this time on it. It would be nice not just to go by the IGN vault's votes, because I mean, you want to be able to have an objective eye taking a look at the content. And you know, it also takes you have to look at judging this content a little bit differently than you would a single player module, where, you know, you would want to go through the entire thing. Well, Persistent Worlds are much larger, like in some cases much more fluid and dynamic, where the story isn't fully developed out and it's RP driven and those types of things. I mean, all this stuff takes into account, and none of that would be taking away from a rating on a Persistent World. But it's definitely something that we're going to be getting into shortly, where we actually will be actually joining Persistent World, spending some time there, taking a look at things, and you know, just kicking the tires a little bit, very similar to something that Beyond the Pale did with his three-hour tour series he did a couple years back. But something to definitely keep an eye out for.
And with that, we have some Neverwinter Nights 1 news. There are some modules out there now that are getting close to their Hall of Fame status. The first one is Parenthian 04, Opening Moves. It's missing just one vote on the vault, so get out there and check this one out. They need another vote to get the Hall of Fame status. This is a buildup of armies along the northern border has finally escalated into war with the orcs. The adventurers are recruited and placed on the front lines as a special unit supporting the body of the Imperial armies as they drive north. This is the fourth module in the campaign. It's the first non-prelude module. It continues from where the last module left off, and the module should be played with characters from your chapter 1, 2, and 3 modules, ideally the whole same party. However, you should be able to play with a different group or a different character with a minimal fuss, thanks to their character party verification system. You can check out the README file for rules changes, and there's a non-hack pack version, and an optional movie to check out also.
And we also have another one, The Alchemist and Ophelia. It's only also missing one vote. And the synopsis of that is, the village of Borges lies on the outskirts of the Dale Lands. Its only excitement is the occasional passing adventurer on their way to bigger and better things. You play one such character on his or her way to Shadowdale. While you only intend to spend a quiet evening in a sleepy village, you end up getting much more than you bargained for. This module is intended for a new character, especially non-fighter types who have a difficulty with the first level. There is almost no combat. It is a story-driven module. Those looking for lots of combat and puzzles may find it boring. Those looking for interesting characters and a good story, hopefully, will like it. No, I didn't put hopefully in there. That was actually in the description. That's a first disclaimer of the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Yeah.
We got some Neverwinter Nights 2 news, too, so go kick that off, Jason.
Yeah, in Neverwinter Nights 2 side, we have Persistent World, a couple of Persistent Worlds that are close to the Hall of Fame status as well. There's the World of Charon, which is missing only 3 votes, and also Highland Saga, Black Dawn, missing 5 votes. So get out there and check out those persistent worlds. They need a couple more votes to reach that Hall of Fame status.
Also, we have a new module for Neverwinter Nights 2. It's called Koniak Chronicles 2, the Zamorian Chronicles. A little brief synopsis of that as well. It says, tired of the grim and frozen north, you have headed to the south of Zamora to see what the so-called civilized lands may offer. But a baptism of fire awaits you once you step within the gates of Orangen, Zamora's second city and renowned throughout the Hyborian lands as the City of Thieves. These are the second chronicles set in R.E. Howard's world of Conan. While the City of Orangen is and the setting is taken from the Conan stories of R.E. Howard and others, the adventure itself is original. It is suitable for PCs around the 15th through 17th level, either a pre-existing PC who completed Conan Chronicles 1 or a new PC level can it be auto-leveled at the start of the game. So another interesting departure from the standard Forgotten Realms setting. If you like the Conan background by R.E. Howard, it's definitely something to check out. In closing the news segment, I want to remind everybody again that the Neverwinter Nights podcast will be attending for a public appearance at the 2011 Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio, at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. We'll be there on June 25th, which is a Saturday. Our time and locations will be posted prior to our by Friday evening, which would be the 24th, once we figure out exactly where we're going to set up and what time we plan on heading on over. So definitely want to check that out. And also will depend on what time, if we do get the authorization for the interview of the executive producer of the new Cryptic title. So with that, we've got an interview here with Bubba Thud. Hey, Bubba Thud, thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure to be on.
Hey, yeah, thanks a lot. And, you know, I've been looking over your work, and it's fantastic. And you really did really create a great module for Neverwinter Nights 1. It's extremely well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, start off telling us a little bit about yourself. You can get as personal as you want, or stick to NW-related info, or both.
Well, I started off in D&D back, 1976. Or something with the old white box set, and pretty much followed it through all its permutations. And I kind of got out of it for a while and got back into it when Baldur's Gate, the game, came out, and was really impressed by that. And when the Neverwinter Nights came out, and I found out you could actually make your own modules, I just had to get into that. So I've tinkered around for a couple years and finally kind of put something together that thought was fairly decent addition to the modules out there, and I finally got that out the door, and been pretty pleased with the feedback I've got from people on that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, looking over the vault with the number of votes, you just recently got your Hall of Fame status. A really good job on producing that and promoting yourself as well, getting your name out there. Sometimes materials are created, and then they, because of the vault and the way it's organized, sometimes it's a little bit hard to keep things on the top.
Yeah, I've noticed a couple of the modules that got Hall of Fame status lately have been like from 2002 and stuff. I feel like, wow, that's a long time to wait. So you do have to do some self-promotion on that, because it's you just got to get the info out there to the players.
Yeah, absolutely. Big thing that I've noticed, a lot of times too, people will download your module, play it, love it, but won't actually go on and vote on it.
Yeah,
that's the kick in the pants right there, because there's not a lot of venues or avenues that you could promote your material and get it out there. So the vault being the only method, and it's just one of those types of things. It's a little frustrating as a content developer, but I share your pain.
I found what was very effective was doing my own, putting together a review made up of user comments, because I had some really well thought out commentary from a lot of people who were doing playtesting. And just by stringing that together in the manner of the regular vault reviews, that got the word out, not so much through my voice, but through theirs. So I think a lot of players downloaded that review I did and were impressed enough by it to start playing.
Yeah, that's a really creative way of doing it, too. I mean, to actually create your own review and to do that, because trying to get feedback sometimes is like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah, it's not just for modules. Persistent worlds are exact same thing. Sometimes you gotta resort to looking at chat logs and to see what you've done, whether or not it's bunk or not. So that's definitely a way to do it.
So what got you interested in creating this Neverwinter Nights module? What was your vision behind it?
Well, I was interested in doing a what I call an urban origin story. I mean, everyone's done the noble peasant whose family gets killed by orcs and goes on the path of revenge, sort of the Conan type thing. But I wanted to do something more for the sort of the thieves, the street thugs, wizards, clerics. That there's very few modules that have really pertinent starting stories for if you're like a cleric. I mean, you would assume you would go study at a monastery or something like that. If you're a wizard, you'd go to some kind of a wizarding school. So I combined those together and made the module basically works for everyone except for rangers and druids, which were, sort of outdoorsy types anyway. So any other class, pretty much, when you start the module, you get put down one of five storylines. The first half of the game is going to be very different from every other storyline. So you don't even sort of meet the other companions until about halfway through, and then they start gathering up and forming the nucleus of a party. And what's different from like Dragon Age, which also has these different starting types based on your race and so on, is that the story is about five adventurers who come together. You play one of those. The paths you don't choose become your companions, if you follow me.
Yeah, I follow you.
So each of them has their own story. They each pick up, it's a kind of a mystery where there's a lot of things going on, and each path picks up sort of one trick of that mystery, and as they meet each other, they kind of exchange information, and then the whole picture kind of comes more into focus, which makes it really replayable, because if you play as a fighter, you're going to be basically working as an underworld thug for a while. And if you play as the sort of the good cleric, you'll be coming at it from a completely different perspective. So there's, each time you play it as a different class, it starts off as a completely different story.
That's a really neat idea.
Yeah, that definitely ups the replay value and like basically the life of the content. It just keeps changing depending on what type of you're starting at.
Yeah, I've had a lot of really good feedback on that, and I've had a lot of people who've said, I never play wizards or I never play clerics, but I had to just to find out what was in that plot path. So that's kind of gratifying to hear that kind of feedback.
Oh heck yeah, that's huge. When people are actually replaying something just because they want to see what you did for the other types, because what you did for the plight that they played was that compelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the background, like the story behind it?
It's kind of based off an old campaign I did back when I was DMing, and I developed it a lot when I was living in Europe. I'd go out and visit castles and cities, and that's one reason why I really tried to make especially the areas as realistic as possible. You've got the cramped quarters and the slum part, and then the wider streets and the main part, and a lot of little details and things like that. It's basically set in sort of a Tolkien-esque alternate history of Europe. So it's the Northern Empire, sort of loosely based off the Holy Roman Empire, the German Empire of the Middle Ages, has just suffered a huge defeat in a distant land. The emperor was killed. Most of his family were killed. The only sort of surviving family is a 12-year-old princess and an 8-year-old prince. And kind of in the background, and you kind of pick this up from eavesdropping conversations in pubs or listening to the town crier, is that there's a civil war is basically brewing between two factions, one of which supports the young prince and one the young princess. And the bad guys, the Keldanians, which are a type of I suppose you could think of as like the Death Eaters from Harry Potter, a whole nation full of Lucius Malfoys, these arrogant aristocratic wizards who were defeated in a war long ago but who live up in these mountain fastnesses. They see an opportunity now to weaken and destroy the Northern Empire, so they're sending in agents to basically create chaos. And that's basically what this story is about. The players start, this is kind of about the transition of going from an apprentice, a servant, kind of just a day laborer or schlub, becoming an adventurer almost inadvertently as they kind of stumble upon these clues and start piecing together the mystery. So basically we've got a condemned necromancer who was brought to the city to be executed, who was mysteriously rescued, four gnomish priests who'd show up on short notice. The captain of the ship can't quite understand why they hired him. They go missing. There's a lot of other mysteries that start happening, but they all lead to kind of the same conclusion. And at that point, the player will have the option of joining up all five thread lines. So you end up with your four other companions. And then at that point, it goes on to sort of a kind of a classic pen and paper dungeon crawl, which gets to the main confrontation at the end of that.
Well, that's very, very detailed. Very nice aspect to it, too. I really get you in a lot of the games or the stories that I've seen in games, including Baldur's Gate, for instance, which you mentioned previously. They do have an element where is a realistic entry point for the player. If you come into somewhere and you're already king, whoever, it's a little bit different. It's like to actually have that where you're stumbling on, it makes you more curious to find things. It's just really cool how you set that up.
Yeah, I tried to give each starting area a very unique feel. Sort of the good cleric starts in a monastery and they starts off doing, I try to make all the basic fetch it quests for the low levels mean something, or at least get you to a point where you're going to pick up on another clue. So you might do a thing where you're delivering medicine to sick people in the town, and then you'll order something which leads to another quest. And then wizards are starting off, and I try to make, sort of like a Hogwarts branch campus, where you've got the wizarding quests that go on before you get out into the main portion of the game. And each one's got a very definite feel of its own. And probably the most interesting one is you get to play the bad guy is one of the quests, the evil person, where you're actually part of the conspiracy. And it's probably best to play that one last because you get a lot of background information. But you're setting up some of the problems that the other adventurers have to solve, in a sense. And then through a plot twist, you actually become part of the party and end up working for them. But I don't want to give that detail of that away.
So which class is it that does that part?
An evil cleric or monk.
How would you classify your module? Is it all role-playing or action, adventure? Do you have high, medium, or low magic?
Low magic. I've always preferred the low magic, like the original Baldur's Gate, which I still consider to be one of the best role-playing games ever made. I still like going back and fiddling around with that. The categories, most of the classes are a lot of role-playing, especially if you're playing like the fighter or the thief, because you're starting off in the slums. You're usually destitute when you start, and you have to make a lot of choices which may not agree with your alignment, especially if you're good. So you might be called upon to do some, kind of mob dirty work, and then you'll have a choice along the way as far as how is this going to affect your alignment, your outlook. So you've got a lot of more choice in that. If you're starting out in the church faction, well, you're pretty much stuck with mostly lawful good choices, because that's kind of the nature of the church. But other ones, there's at least a couple quests. We've got some decisions that'll have a pretty big effect on the way your character develops.
What kind of custom content do you use? Do you use any particular hack packs or tile sets or anything like that that you give mention to?
Yeah, I love custom content. It's really what's kept the game alive, I think. I've got CEP, I think 2.3. It's a really good hack pack for armor and weapons called Fëanor's Medieval Armory. And I'm a bit of a history geek, so that one's got very realistic, historical-looking weapons and armor, which I really like. And kind of the sequel that I'm working on, I just finished changing over all the areas to Lord of Worms Seasonal Forest. I don't know if you've seen that, but it is just gorgeous. It's hard to believe that's
it's
Never
really
Winter Nights original. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that the fact that you're right about the custom content. I mean, it goes without mention, I think, that there's just so much you can do with the custom content that's created. Even in previous interviews with module creators, it actually even to the point where it's helped them direct the direction of where they were taking the module.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is really cool whenever you're given the tools to actually create your vision, you know, to actually get it to the point where it's realized.
Yeah, no, I also use quite a lot of custom music, and being detail-oriented, I like putting in things like, if there's going to be music in a pub, there's going to be performers. You know, it kind of bugs me when in some modules you go in and they've got just music playing and there's no performers there. So I've used that Kalen's band hack and modified that a bit. So when you go through the city of Agranos, there's a lot of different sort of music venues, and I've got it kind of scaled so like the high end music is going to be played in the richer part of town, and then the sort of the scummier part of town, kind of the low end music. But I've made a point to really make music a part of the immersion, because I really wanted to create a module where you just get into it so much it just feels like you almost forget you're in a game and you're just more like watching a movie that you're creating yourself.
Cool. So you do a lot of scripting and actual custom content work yourself, or?
Yeah, the hacks I've got are I don't do coding. I'm a complete Frankenstein coder. I'll find something that works and modify it till it works with whatever I'm trying to do. But I'm pretty much completely dependent on Lilac Souls script generator.
Yeah, a lot of people we've talked to use that for coding. I never actually had the luxury of using that. I've had to do everything by hand in Neverwinter too. But yeah, it's really cool that they have something like that. What's your experience using the Lilac script generator?
It's fantastic. The only time it doesn't work is if you're trying just to do something really weird, and then you've got the community for that. And I've had so much help from a lot of really good scripters. I can hardly remember most of their names, but even like Festerpot and some of the other legends. If you give them a problem that's interesting and new, they love to help. But if you give them something that's simple, then they're all like, well, go to Lilac Souls. So usually when I come up with a really interesting question, like, how do I get these band animations to match up with the music that's played, and other complex things like that, they're more than happy to pitch in and help, which really made it possible.
Yeah, definitely the support of actual people out in the community is thick, no doubt about that. I mean, I've tapped a few resources myself for some head stomping questions and different things like that we've came across ourselves, and you're right, it's really nice to have that resource out there. Where do you see the Neverwinter Nights community going in the upcoming years?
That's really hard to say, because there's never been a game like Neverwinter Nights. I've talked to a lot of people on the forums about that, and it seems that the trend in the sort of the cutting edge games is that they're becoming so complex you have to have a professional team. You've got to have certain scripters and animators and area design, and they've all got to be top notch, and it's going to take them forever to get anything done. Whereas with Neverwinter Nights, it's still about the only game I've ever heard of where one person can create a full epic module, and I don't see the industry moving back to that model, because it's kind of not really in their economic interest to do so. But the Neverwinter Nights community and the custom content is keeping this game going. I mean, who knows? This could become almost a permanent fixture. I don't see the bulk of the community moving on to things like Dragon Age, because from what I've heard, it's just so complex to work. You can only make small modules unless you've got some kind of a collaborative effort.
Yeah, I heard that too about Dragon Age. You're right. I mean, we talk about financial models. I mean, the only thing that I could even propose would be creating something that you market strictly for that reason. Say, look, you pay for this tool, it's going to be $600 or something. It's going to be something that you could use to make whatever, not just include it with the game itself. I mean, I can't think of any other real economic feasible way that they're going to continue doing that. You're right, absolutely, about that. And you have any thoughts about the new Neverwinter title coming from out from Cryptic?
I've kind of been in, since I got the module done, kind of not really into what's going on in the world that much. I've been working on the sort of the sequel, but I haven't really seen that. But I'm interested to see. My only concern with any new module or Neverwinter Nights game is it something that one person can use to make a good quality product. You know, if it's something that's going to take a team, I don't see it replacing Neverwinter Nights. But if they keep it to the point where it's easy enough for one person, you know, can have their vision put out there, then I think, yeah, they might, the community might move on to that.
Yeah, I've seen they have released some screenshots. The new tool set, it's not called a tool set, it's actually called a foundry or a forge. And I took a look at some of the screenshots at it, and it does look like it, just from screenshots, of course. There's no real requirements been posted or anything like that, what features it's going to have. But what I have seen, it looks very simple to use. I mean, they've taken, like, whereas if you look at the Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 tool sets, where they've been more like a, almost like a Visual Studio, like totally professional, very technical oriented. The new tool set looks like it's been, you know, really geared towards like end user. So I will say that. Now, obviously, there's kind of early to say anything else, but just from looking at what it promises, it does look to me that from looking at it, that it's much easier to use. Now, what you can do with it, well, that remains to be seen with when they actually start releasing a beta version of it, or, you know, something that could be played around with or tinkered with by the community.
So how long does it generally take to complete your module the first time through, at least?
That pretty much depends on how much of the side quests you do. If you want to charge right in and just go straight linear, probably 6 hours. But if you do all the side quests that are involved, 20 plus, I would say. I've done that just as testing.
So that's a fairly large module.
Yeah, I ran out of room on the, what do they call that? There's that number of elements that you're allowed to have in a module. And basically I exceeded that a couple times and had to go back and sort of delete things. So I couldn't make it any bigger.
Whoa. That's what I call beefy.
Yeah, right. Well, the amazing thing about that is, you know, a lot of times as a player, you'll find, you know, locked off areas because that's someone else's adventure, basically. So, you know, there are 5 starting adventures. A lot of those areas are only accessible to that character. So you don't really realize the size of it unless you play all 5, you know, character starts. So it adds up tremendously. I was surprised myself because it's only the only outdoor sections, there's like 4. You know, there's a West Docks, the Merchants area, the Slums, and the East Docks. But when you add up all the other interior parts, it's pretty formidable.
Yeah, I can't imagine how much you had to put in there to blow out the limitations on that. I mean, I've seen some beefy modules that if you're running out of space, oh my God. That is cool, though, that, I mean, that you've developed that much content. I mean, that's nuts. Have you ever, I know it's a little off topic, but have you ever released any of, like, prefabbed areas to the community or anything like that?
Yeah, after Agronost, I released a couple. I basically decided I'm just not doing anything with the old rural tile set, which I never liked, really, because of that whole ziggurat elevation thing. But I'd made a whole bunch of villages and stuff like that, which I decided just to package up and release as a village pack for, you know, people who are developing using that old tile set. And also a island fortress, which is just one of a doodle that I got into, and I ended up making, you know, like 6-level dungeon out of it, but it didn't really fit into anything I was working on, so I released that as well.
Excellent. Yeah, that's cool. I thought when I was going through, I was looking at your portfolio in the vault. I do remember seeing a couple things out there like that, so that is cool. Also, I seen that you were runner-up in the AME Golden Dragon Award for Best Role-Playing Mod. How are you not...
That was thrilling. I didn't even realize I was being considered for that, so I was quite thrilled to get the email from them on that.
That's really cool. How'd the process work? They just got an email and then that was pretty much it.
Yeah, until they had the actual contest. So but yeah, that's a good group over there, and it's quite an honor to be recognized by them.
Yeah, definitely. I know Andarian and a few of the others have been on the podcast in the past, you know, going over the actual award winners. So they definitely are very thorough when they do the stuff. So if you've been nominated, you've done something right. That's what we like to say. Actually, you know, just a small segue, I mean, we here at the podcast are actually going to start our own set of awards for some, not the same stuff that the AME Dragon, Golden Dragon Award folks do, but for some of the breaks in the chain, so to speak, like so for Persistent Worlds, something they haven't done in the past. But I think that there's a lot of good custom content, i.e. Persistent Worlds, I think that really should be something put out there for review too. So it's not just modules, but persistent worlds, which are extensions of modules at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's great, because as a developer, it really is a good feeling to be recognized for all the, you know, the many hours of work you put in, even though, you know, there's no cash bonus or anything like that. But just to have the word out there, I think that's great. And as a player, you know, there's just so many modules out there that you have to have some kind of guiding star to lead you. And, you know, awards are a great one. You know, I usually, you know, we'll look for, you know, reviews first, and then, you know, what kind of awards they got before I'll get into starting a module. So that's a great way to direct people to good quality products.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that in a way, because of that is your payment. You know, you're doing it for fun, you enjoy doing it, creating these worlds for people to play, and, you know, telling your story. And then at the end of the day, the more people that say, hey, you know, that story was really good, you know, it's like Baldur's Gate. You know, that's not what they would say, Baldur's Gate, but you know what I'm saying. You know, your name becomes like a Baldur's Gate because of what you've spent all this time and effort and talent to create. Yeah, it's definitely cool.
Well, that's all the questions we had prepared for you. So is there anything else that you would like to share with the audience?
Well, trying to think of inspirations. Probably the biggest inspiration for the module was in the Ultimate Background. It's an old book called The Broken Sword by, I think it was Paul Anderson. It's sort of a, I guess in Tolkien terms, a fourth age book of when sort of the old gods are fading, the elves are fading away, and all the old sort of magic is coming to the point where the they're coming into contact with sort of Christianity and man's world. And that's kind of the theme of the Agronos module. It's in that kind of a space where there's sort of the transition between the old world of magic and the new world of man coming in. And also, as far as inspiration, movie-wise, Pulp Fiction and the Guy Ritchie Snatch. I don't know if you're familiar with those two, but they're...
Oh, Pulp Fiction, yes.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction.
Certainly.
Yeah, even more Guy Ritchie's film, Snatch, which is a sort of a British crime caper. What's interesting about it is it's got groups of people, much like the characters in the module, who start off, and they're all coming from different perspectives and from different angles, coming after the same goal. And it's just the way he weaves all the different threads in. And, you know, they come into contact with each other, they cooperate with each other, they fight each other. That was a really inspirational film when making the module, because I wanted to try to get that sense of other adventurers are going after the same thing you are. And you'll sometimes meet them like in cameos before they become your companions. They'll just be like walking down the street, or they'll be coming out of a shop or something like that. And people who are observant will, I think, get a much more sense that it's... I've had commenters say that it just feels alive. You know, the characters will do things that just seem, you know, how could they have scripted that? But it's just patience, persistence, and the scripting to come up with those kind of scenarios that really make it feel like there's something more to it than just coding.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, that and the fact that when you can glean these story types from stuff like that you know has been successful stories, they're compelling. That always is good when you can integrate that to your story yourself. Well, you know, I want to thank you again for coming on and talking about your module and all the work and time you put into everything. We will certainly throw some votes out there for your product as well, and we'll go over that in our upcoming appearance in Origins, and definitely because we're compiling a list of some of the interviews that we've conducted, and yours is going to be one of them. Quality modules have been created for the Neverwinter Nights 1 game series. So,
awesome.
Yeah, definitely you're going to get it. It'll be a part of our dossier. Don't worry. So, if you get a couple people coming on, you know, saying, hey, I met these tool bags out in Origins, they were telling me you had a great great product. Well, you know who they're referring to. So,
excellent. Have a good time out there.
Well, thanks a lot. And, you know, we'll stay tuned whenever we get broadcasted. So,
yeah.
Well, you get the closing line.
Okay. Everyone out there, get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity. We're solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2011.
Oh, I thought you were going to finish the last part of that.
Edit. Edit. Okay. That'd be a good blooper, wonder. I thought you were going to finish that. No, no. Okay, where... Okay,